You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Can we continue our conversation about fires? Spare a thought, of course, for people who are caught up in this fire, the fires that have ravaged this weekend. I think of our firefighters. I remember the big conversations we had with the firefighters who survived the Bank of Lisbon fire. Do you recall that a couple of years ago? I think it was 2018. And it was such a tragic event where we lost firefighters in that particular incident. And one wonders whether or not much has changed since then. There was the controversy around fire engines, which were paid for but never delivered in the city of Johannesburg. There was also Nkosi Zana Dlamini Zuma as the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs when she submitted a written parliamentary response saying that 21 fire engines of the 21 fire engines in the city of Johannesburg, only 6 were operational compared with 57 in places like Ekurhuleni and 25 in the city of Tshwane. So it goes without saying that we need to hopefully pick up lessons from this moment that we are experiencing right now and learn and push for change within our cities and how these emergency services are carried out. And so I thought, let's keep the focus on fires, not just those at these institutions, but wherever else in society, knowing that we have such an inefficiency or there is this deficiency as far as fire engines are concerned. What are your fire stories? Do you have a fire story? And what lessons did you learn out of that? Because we know they are absolutely devastating. If you've been in a fire, if you could share that, because the vision that I constantly see are the hospital workers at Charlotte Matleke who were pushing patients through these smoke-filled corridors, trying to get patients out to safety. And obviously, visibility is impacted. How do you breathe under those circumstances? I've never been in an actual fire, but the notion or prospect is just simply horrifying. If you have fire stories, really, this is the time for us to talk about it so that we can all learn lessons from those experiences. I remember when we were kids, my mom was a nurse and she would work long hours and sometimes overnight. And we had sat warming ourselves by the heater. We'd switched it on, but then the power went off and we put the heater when we're tidying up a little bit later back where it sits, which is a little gap between the wall and the couch. And the part with the bars was facing the couch. And so when the power came back on, we didn't switch it off at the main, you know, not at the main, but at the plug. But when the power came back on, it obviously switched the heater on. The heater went on and started burning the couch. And luckily, I think it was the nature of that foam or the material within the couch, because all that happened was that the upholstery burnt and that foam inside or just smoked. It didn't quite catch fire, but it smoked. And from then on, now, even now, when there's load shedding, when there's no power, the power goes off, I'm always conscientious about making sure that I either switch off all the plugs because you forget which ones were on sometimes, or you turn it off at the main switch. But of course, you need to know that the power's back on. So now the tendency is to try and switch off all the plugs, because as kids, we were outside playing and then suddenly there was this smoke that came out of the house. You know, we hadn't closed the curtains yet because the sun hadn't gone down yet, but the smoke was coming out of the house. The house was filled with smoke. Luckily, there were no flames and none of us were in the house, but we were playing outside in the streets and luckily we weren't too far. But it could have been an absolute disaster. We reflect on it today still that we came really close to what could have been a complete devastation of our home and over something so small, so small. But the lesson there was to make sure that plugs are switched off when the power has gone off. So if you have any fire safety or fire stories that we can learn from, do share them, because we'll be speaking to Bevan Wolf, who is a fire and safety consultant. Stanley, you're calling us from Centurion. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear, Stanley.
Thank you. I just wanted to share my story, and it's not really so much about the story. It's more about the advice I picked up from the experience. So what had happened is we were in our house. This was when we were still living down at the coast a few years ago, And we were making supper, and we were in the lounge, and the supper was going in the stove, and there was a problem with the electricity, faulty wiring. And sparks fell into the pot that was busy warming up with the oil, and this caused this huge fire. But the, in the kitchen. But the point was, I realized the only thing worse than not having a fire extinguisher is having an unserviced fire extinguisher, because then you're under the false impression that should there be a fire, that you can take care of it. And in our situation, we had that false belief. But when we grabbed the fire extinguisher that we hadn't serviced in many years, it didn't work at all. And it caused an even bigger problem and an even bigger fire. So that would be my piece of advice, is have a, always have a fire extinguisher, because you never need it until you need it. The day when you need it is when you're grateful that you did that. Have one where everybody knows where to get hold of it and have it serviced regularly. You don't want to be in that situation where you believe you're covered and you can, and suddenly you have nothing, because then the panic really starts.
Yes, great advice, Stanley. Thank you so much. Thank you for that. I remember as well, you must look out for people who say they are servicing your fire extinguisher. There's a, not a syndicate per se, but there are people who say that they're coming. It's a service that you pay for. As I remember, as a small business, we used to pay for the service, and they would come around saying they're here to check that the fire extinguisher is still at the right pressure, the right levels, and so on. And then later we realized that they weren't the people we had contracted. So look out for people who purport to be service providers of that nature. But if you have any fire stories that we could learn from, as Stanley has done, give us a call. In this conversation, we'll be also speaking to Bevan Wolf, who is a fire and safety consultant. Bevan, thank you so much for your time at when fire is foremost in our mind, considering everything that we've witnessed this weekend. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Azania.
So earlier I was giving details about the lack of adequate fire trucks in our city, particularly that of the 21 fire engines in the city of Johannesburg, only 6 were operational compared to other cities, other metros like Ekurhuleni, which has 57, and 25 in Tshwane. And this was based on parliamentary submissions. But there are also other areas that we need to be vigilant around. And in the case of Charlotte Makleke Hospital, questions were raised about fire hydrants and whether or about the nearest fire hydrants working. Some reports even say that Charlotte Makleke did not have a fire hydrant within its premises. And I'm not asking you to comment about specifically that case, but fire hydrants around our city, are they in the condition that they should be in?
Right. Zania, the two issues is that we have hydrants that are provided by the city. So those are community hydrants that you find in the streets and you find in the community at large. And those hydrants need to be maintained by the city of Johannesburg. Then you have private hydrants that are on the premises. So the hydrants that they're speaking about are those private hydrants that would have been within the premises of the hospital. And unfortunately, from the reports, we are told that the hydrants were either deficient or they'd been badly damaged, if they even were still in the position they were. And that is the onus on the owner to ensure that those hydrants, first of all, are where they should be in terms of the design. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, that they are maintained and that they are operational. And indeed, that is legislated, they must be maintained in an operational condition. So that is a concern, and there the problem lies with the actual owner. And I'm not going to point a finger at specifically who the owner is. But and the community hydrants, on the other hand, they need to be maintained and looked after by the city itself.
Mm-hmm. I remember even with the Bank of Lisbon fire that I was talking about, where we lost firefighters, the pressure was not adequate for them to be able to sustain, to be able to put out the fire.
Right. Once again, there the actual hydrants within the building, because you have a rising main in a building.
Yes.
And you have hydrants, you have landing valves within a building. Mm. And those landing valve hydrants also, in that instance, did not have water and they were not functional. And that was obviously a major contributor
Absolutely.
To the inability to deal with the fire.
Let's go to Beverly calling us from Sandton, as we also taking your fire stories, because there's so much we can learn and change out of the stories that we've been covering over the weekend and today. Beverly, good afternoon.
Hi, Aza, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for coming on.
No worries. I think every home needs to be have a fire hydrant in their home that's readily available. I had a jacuzzi bath, and I put the motors on, and 5 minutes later, I was sitting in the bath. My bath, the motors caught a light, and there was smoke coming out. The next minute, there were flames, and I jumped out the bath, and if it wasn't for that little fire hydrant that I had, my house probably would have burnt down. So it's so imperative that we take note of this, and that each household buys a fire hydrant and keeps it, you know, in a place where your staff are aware of it and show them how to use it, because it was a very terrifying experience.
Yeah, I can imagine. Beverly, thank you. Once again, the question of having fire hydrants coming up. And here's a voice note.
Hi, Zanya. Twice I've almost set the kitchen alight, putting on a pan of oil and then walking away and being distracted. The most recent time was during the first week of lockdown. Came into the kitchen and there was this huge blaze, and the fire was about to catch the cupboards, and that would have been a complete disaster because nobody was leaving their homes at that time. But I was saved both times by a very cheap builder's warehouse fire alarm that really works really well. As soon as it detects any kind of smoke, it goes off. In fact, it's been more than twice that we've been saved by those fire alarms. So I really, really think that everybody should have one of those in their kitchen and elsewhere in the house. They're not expensive and they're completely necessary. Everybody should get one. Cheers.
Thank you. Lots that we can learn from. So, Bevan, let me ask you about the question of fire hydrants in a home, how we should look after them, and the point that's been made with this caller about those fire alarms, because we don't seem to have that culture. As we see, maybe television has spoilt us. You know, we see a little bit of smoke and then there's the fire, the alarm goes off and then the sprinklers go off. They don't seem to be top of mind.
Right. I think that terminology is a problem when it comes to layperson. And we need to differentiate between a fire hydrant and an extinguisher.
Yeah.
So in this instance, certainly you're not going to have a fire hydrant in your house, and you're certainly not going to, unless you've got a very large house and a fire hose wheel. But what you would have is a fire extinguisher, and it is a recommendation that all households should at least have one fire extinguisher, or maybe multiple fire extinguishers, depending on the size and depending on where the hazard areas are, certainly for the kitchen. And the benefit of having a smoke detector or a fire detector, but the one that you buy at the builders or at the hardware store, that is a smoke detector, and when it does detect smoke, it has a built-in alarm as well. So it's a detection and an alarm device. And it is absolutely imperative, particularly when you are sleeping in a locked-up area which is cordoned off because of security reasons. Should you have the development of a fire in high-risk areas, so near to the kitchen or in the kitchen is a good location for it, but you can have multiple throughout the house, and they would certainly alert you to a fire at an early stage and allow for your evacuation, safe evacuation, or to deal with a fire in its incipient stage as well. So absolutely vital that we all adopt the necessity of having it. It's not legislated in our country, as it is in some countries, but certainly it is of benefit.
Right. Bevan, stay with us, and we're going to continue to take your calls and your voice notes. My guest is fire and safety consultant Bevan Wolf, and we're looking at your fire stories and the lessons we can draw from that. Guess what I'll be doing after three? I'm going to get a fire extinguisher.
You're with Azania Mosaka
on 702.
And we're back talking about lessons we can learn from your fire stories as we look to increase fire safety. Fire has been top of mind as a result of the fires that raged outside UCT in Cape Town. And now the Table Mountain National Park says due to the winds seem to be fanning the fires even more today. And then last week, of course, or over the weekend, at the end of the last week, we saw a fire starting out at Charlotte Makleke Hospital. So what can we do to all increase our safety as far as fire is concerned? Well, fire and safety consultant Bevan Wolf is with us. Nasreen, thank you for your patience. Hello.
Hi, Zania. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fine, thanks. I just want to relate a little story that I had about 6 months ago,
yeah.
A little episode. I was in my kitchen and my helper noticed that there was a fire coming out from the geyser. I have a gas geyser at home. And within 5 minutes, the entire gas geyser burst into flames. The extinguisher was stacked somewhere far away, but I don't know, God just showed me the way. And I found the extinguisher, and fortunately, my husband doused the fire very quickly. Mm. There was a car parked nearby. There was a gas tank very nearby to the gas geyser. So I would highly recommend that people keep even a small tank in the kitchen particularly, or nearby. And you get them in inconvenient sizes. So if for a housewife, you don't have to carry a 9-kilo tank in your hand. You get them in different sizes. So it's great and handy. And since then, I've become much more aware. And I also keep some burn shield in my kitchen.
It's like a burn shield gel.
But that's my story for today.
Thank you for sharing that, Nasreen. Thank you.
All right, then. Take care.
Yeah, because of the failures with Eskom, lots of us are turning to gas as a result. So, Bevan, is there a rule that we need to remember when it comes to the different types of fires caused by maybe electrical malfunctions? In this case, she was dealing with gas. Earlier, someone was talking about cooking. Is there sort of a rule of thumb about fires that are caused or where different substances are involved?
Yes, there is, but we have a dry chemical powder extinguisher is the most common, and generally the ABC type, so it's the most common. You get the multi-purpose type of dry powder extinguisher, which you can use on liquids. You can use it on electrical apparatus at low voltage. It's a non-conducting powder, and it can be used on generally most fires. So for choice for a house, the dry powder would be a suitable extinguishing media. And then obviously the rule is that if it is a fire that has been caused by electricity or involves an electrical appliance that is live, it is good practice to then definitely switch off the electricity.
Hmm.
Otherwise, you're going to have a reignition. If it's a stove where you've got heated oil that has caught a light or residual fat anywhere that has caught a light, then it's also best practice that you switch off the heating appliance, because otherwise you'd have reignition again of that. The basic rules is how you manage the scene and that you use a safe extinguishing agent for a domestic residence, and including you can extinguish gas, but the rule is that as soon as you have extinguished the fire, you must be able to shut off the valve. Otherwise, you're going to have an accumulation of gas in that area.
Mm.
And that could lead to a hazardous and a dangerous situation. So you need to shut off the main valve to stop the leak wherever it is.
Yes.
Listening to the lady about the gas fire, it probably was in the heating unit itself and not the cylinder valve that was burning. So yes, very important that you switch off the gas so you don't continue to have a leak.
Yes, because we also hear that, you know, the initial reports is that the fire was out and then it reignited again. Are these the sort of circumstances where that can happen? You think it's out, but you haven't quite solved the source or the problem.
The problem we're now looking at large fires, and we're looking at professional intervention as opposed to the domestic residence. So, yes, in the domestic residence, you want to make sure you put the fire out properly. and that you will not have a reignition because of either electricity or leaking gas or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. You remove reignition sources. On the other hand, what we saw that happens at a large scale fire is we have phases of firefighting. So initially, the firefighting is either defensive or offensive strategy, and it's intervention using water, foam, whatever the case may be. As soon as the fire is doused sufficiently to call it a fire stop, that means the fire is no longer growing and the fire is being doused, that you don't have visible flames, etc., and that you've isolated the fire to hot spots. Mm-hmm. Then we go into what's called a damping down phase. And if that is not completed and if that is not done properly, and then the service retreats and the fire reignites, that's a very dangerous situation. Mm-hmm. Because then the fire can once again get out of control. And so the damping down phase is the most important when it comes to fire intervention by a professional service.
Yes.
To make sure that everything is out.
Yes. And I'm sure we all have to be conscientious, even in the buildings that we work in. So what sort of things should we raise an alarm about? Because I can recall at the Bank of Lisbon building fire, the escape doors for all the floors did not comply with regulations. And so instead of having a fire officer, clearly we all can play a part in raising alarms about different conditions or worrying conditions.
I think that a lot of the reporting on that specific fire came from a previous report that was a health and safety report, and possibly there were inaccuracies on that.
Okay.
And because of the structural damage, there was not a full investigation of the actual building thereafter. The major issue there was a lack of water, and the firefighters left the trap on the floor. As far as the Bank of Lisbon, the people, the occupants, actually evacuated 100% safe.
Okay.
So that was actually a plus, is that the building, as it was designed, as it was constructed, and even though there were deficiencies and there was no water in the hose wheels and so forth, but the fact that the fire was on the top floor to start with aided the fact that they could evacuate safely. So there was no injuries to any of the occupants. They all evacuated safely.
Right. Well, Bevan, so, we are going to have to leave it there, I'm afraid. But yes. I think as these two major stories play out, there'll be another opportunity for us to unpack fire safety in a lot more detail. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Azania.
Thank you. That's Bevan Wolf, Fire and Safety.